What I want to talk about today is whether we are dealing with a program or an experiment. And by that, I will eventually get to alien intentions. Everybody assumes in some way that we are dealing with an experiment. The question then is, what is the evidence for the experiment? And I think that we should just sort of begin to look at what we already know, in quotes. First of all, we know that there's UFO sightings. People see UFOs by the fact. See lots of them and have been seeing them for a long time now. Not only that, but they see them around the world. The United States does not have a corner on the flying saucer market. This is something that is cross-cultural. And the UFO sightings essentially are the same. Cynthia Hines, who examines UFO sightings and abductions and things in Africa, describes basically the same thing. As we know, in Asia, they're basically the same sightings. In Latin America, it's all the same. The people who see these objects are the good, the bad, the ugly. I mean, it's all over the board. It's anybody and everybody. There is no one type of person who is prone to see a UFO. It's everybody. It's people who are, shall we say, brilliant, who are intellectually challenged, everybody in the middle, people who have no insight whatsoever, people who are remarkably introspective. In other words, it's random. At least overtly. And we have millions of people who are witnesses, and that is not hyperbole. Literally millions. It's widespread, it's very, very large, it's around the world, it's everybody. This, I think, we know. Well, starting about in 1961, actually starting in 1957, essentially, we began to hear about the abduction phenomenon. The abduction phenomenon started out really slowly. Your basic Barney and Betty Hill, 61, and then Antonio Villas-Boas case in Brazil, which happened in 57. We didn't hear about that until 66 as well. And the interesting thing about the cases that we originally heard of was that they were very few and far between. They were rare. They were odd. They were strange. At the same time, the people who were having these experiences seemed to be random. We couldn't really tell whether there was anything overt. What was it about Barney and Betty Hill, you know, that caused an abduction to happen to them? Well, the way we looked at it in those days was there was only one reason. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time. What other reason could there possibly be? And not only that, but Barney and Betty Hill said things that led us to think in the experiment model. That is to say, they had skin scrapings taken. Well, this is obviously, they're examining the specimens here. They asked Barney why his teeth came out, or asked Betty why Barney's teeth came out and hers didn't. They put a needle into Betty's navel and said they were doing a pregnancy test. Well, all of this was the model for an experiment, obviously. This was a basic situation where you have a model of, there's one, get them. You know, if they're coming down, they're examining the flora, the fauna, and it seemed to answer a question, and the question was, why are there UFOs flying around? And early on, people talked about, well, you know, there's UFOs flying around because they're on a reconnaissance mission or something like that. They're reconnoitering. They're examining the flora and the fauna. You know, they're stripping bark off of trees, they're picking up leaves and putting them back, and there were reports of that, in fact. They're digging holes in the dirt and putting them into the little containers, and we got lots of reports of that. I mean, this is all consistent with this idea of an experiment. And so when they picked up Barney and Betty, you pick up a raccoon, you pick up a parakeet, you pick up Barney and Betty. I mean, what difference does it make? Well, the fact is, though, that this began to dominate UFO research and UFO research thinking for forever, till now. It still does, to a certain extent. In fact, it's hard to even think about this phenomenon without using that model, as I said before. Well, the question is then, so what? So what does all this mean? So why am I even going through this, and what does this have to do with the experiment model and the program and all the rest of that? Well, first of all, we know that abductees go around the world. This is what I've shown you right here is a universal phenomenon. I have worked with people from the West African country of Mali, from India, from Romania, from Latin America, you name it. They all say the same thing. They all say it does not matter where they're from. They all describe the same procedures. They describe the same instruments. We are at the point, literally, where when they begin to describe certain instruments, we now know what those instruments are going to be used for. They may not know it. They may be just not aware of it at all. But we pretty much know. We know the sequence of events that's going to happen to them around the world. It almost doesn't matter. In other words, we know when they say A, B, C, we know D's coming. And they're not going to like D. And, and I have to prepare them in my own hypnosis for D. Now, I've done about 750 hypnotic regressions over the past 12 years. And we see a certain routine here, obviously. Well, we also know a couple of other things about the abduction phenomenon. We know that it's intergenerational. As you saw by talking about it, it's intergenerational. Bud said he didn't think it was all the kids, but, you know, I'll tell you something, I think it is all the kids. With abductions, from what I can tell, and I think what we're seeing everywhere now, is that if you have four kids, now that he has four kids, all four kids will most likely be abductees. Now, they may not know it, they may not remember it, and therefore it's hard to tell. We can't always know unless we investigate it, but that's my guess after investigating many, 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 many cases of this. All the kids are abductees. So it's intergenerational. Therefore, all abductees have now two things in common. Now, those two things in common are, number one, they're human. Number two, their mother or their father was an abductee. This is the intergenerational aspect of it. Now, this is not just an intergenerational aspect. This is a bombshell aspect, as I will explain later. This is an aspect that is, let's just put it this way, to use a 60s phrase, it's mind-blowing for what it means, for the implications of it. We also know something else about the abduction phenomenon. We know that it's repetitive, that it happens over and over and over again. We used to think, as in Barney and Betty Hill, it was an adult onset signal event. In fact, we have never seen an adult onset signal event for a targeted abductee. That simply does not come up. So we know, and the people who we have worked with become sensitized to what is going on with them right away, because I have a little questionnaire that I give people, and it tells me essentially what is going on with them. And abductees tend to have a lifetime filled with unusual events. And non-abductees tend to have a lifetime filled with usual events. We know that this happens often, that the abduction phenomenon is enormously, not only widespread, but frequent. It happens over and over and over and over again. And the question then is, well, how many times does it happen? We don't know, and we can't know, and we will never know. That's a given. The only way we can ever know, and this is never going to happen, is by monitoring a person every single minute of the day and night from the time they are born to forever. Let's back up to flying saucers, to UFOs, to the UFO phenomenon itself. Now, what we have here is sort of one phenomenon, but kind of a dual track. We have abductions and we have UFOs. They are all part of the same package, in my opinion. First of all, what we're looking at is a situation of abduction. People are being abducted. Well, how does this come about? It doesn't just generate out of the ether. somebody in authority has to say, let's do it. Somebody has to give the order to move forward. We have completed our tests, we have looked them or whatever it is, somebody has got to say, okay, we're going to do it now. Now, what does that mean? Now I'm going to talk strictly logically. What that means is that a plan has to be put into place. This has to be planned out. It's not going to be just doing it on the fly. They've got to have people sit down and figure out exactly what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. That has to be the case. Not only that, but they must, they absolutely, positively must have the hardware to do this. Now, the hardware are the objects. Every single inside of virtually every UFO that I have ever seen is made for the purpose of abductions. Well, what do you mean by made? You've got to design them first. Those designs are not going to be good in their first generation. Or they're going to be altered. There's got to be people or beings or bits or whatever it is working on these things. There's got to be people in authority who are making the decision to go forward with this set of plans rather than that set. When you say, okay, let's do it, we're going to go with these, they've got to be manufactured. You've got to have some sort of mechanism where these objects can be fashioned, can be made, can be put together. That has to be. There's got to be a whole wing of industrial manufacturing to put these things together, and we know that they have put a lot of them together. Because we know that there are tremendous amounts of UFO sightings, and the chances of them being of the same five objects over and over again are going to be remote. There's going to be an awful lot of objects that have been manufactured for this purpose. Every time a person walks down a hallway, when they look at the various rooms that they're walking by on their way to the room that they're going into, what do they see in those rooms? Tables with FFDs on them. I mean, we are looking at a program that is built in every conceivable way for the idea of abducting people for that purpose. Well, the interesting thing is that when they abduct people, they abduct lots of people. Sure, they abduct them one at a time and in a small group, small objects, a single table. But we see them as well with, you know, 20 people, 50 people, 100 people, 500 tables in a room with people on them in an assembly line fashion. Get them in, do it, get them out. Get more in, do it, get them out. Over and over again, and we think we are seeing this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, around the world. Well, in order to have all this, you must have a hierarchy of authority. What we see here, in fact, on board these objects, is a hierarchy of authority. We see order givers and order takers. We see people who are in authority, and we actually see three and sometimes four structures of authority. Authority flows downward. There's give and take within this. It's not highly rigid, but we do see what this sort of hierarchy of authority. So in other words, there must be design, there must be research and development, there must be manufacture, there must be implementation. And the implementation is the abduction phenomenon. This phenomenon we see has two other aspects to it. It changes over time, I think. Now I'm a little bit shaky here, so this is an opinion as opposed to what we do know. I think that older abduction cases had more machine type of examinations, more machine type of procedures than we see now. Not only that, but we see absolutely many more abductions that are aided by adult hybrids. In fact, in the recent years, we've been seeing abductions conducted completely by adult hybrids, with no aliens at all. well, no, other people. Not only that, but this is a spreading phenomenon, and here comes the bombshell concept. The intergenerational aspect of it. This is the frightening one. You see, with an intergenerational aspect, what that means is that if you start off with a random population, oh, let's just say 100 years ago, around the 1890s, and I'm one of these researchers who feels that the phenomenon goes back to the 1890s, and I personally lose sight of it almost completely after that, or before that, rather. But if you go back to the 1890s, and we have a relative degree of certainty with that, and the reason we have a relative degree of certainty is because of the age of people we have worked with. We're limited by that. In other words, when a person comes to me and they're an abductee, and we know that they've been an abductee since infancy, and they're 65 years old, well, we can date the phenomenon back about 65 years. And if their mother is still alive, then we can question her, although, you know, 90-year-old people don't go into for hypnosis a whole lot these days, unfortunately. But we can also tell from stories in the family about the grandfather or the grandmother or the great-grandparents, and sometimes these are clear abduction accounts, clear. And we can date them back to about the 1890s, to around the time, interestingly enough, of the Mystic Airship Wave, 1896, 1897, the first sort of UFO wave of sorts. Well, if you start off with a random selection of the population, and we do think it is random, what you're going to get is, through normal population increase, you're going to get a cone-like spreading out in the society. That is what I think we see. What we are looking at is a program, obviously. A well-thought-out, well-implemented program that has yet one last aspect, a veneer of secrecy that covers it up. And the secrecy basically is there to prevent us from knowing what they are doing to us. That's why this is a secret phenomenon, because of a compromised program. As a program, this has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it is goal-directed. It is not random. It can't be random if, in fact, it is not an experiment. It must be goal-directed. It must, therefore, have a beginning, a middle, and an end. So I think that this is ultimately a program of integration into the society. The fact is, I think, that the answer to the Fermi paradox is answered by the UFO phenomenon. Where are they? They are here. And the answer to the other problem of how come they haven't colonized is, well, they probably are colonizing. This does appear to be an integration or a colonization program